Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch, and welcome. We're also at philhendryshow.com, the international, intergalactic, worldwide headquarters, the digital headquarters of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So we provide for you not just our radio show, we provide for you a radio show on our videocast, our webcast, which is Phil TV in HD, and we have more and more people enjoying it than ever before, and we certainly invite you to do the same. Tonight we'll have Chris Garvin. Mr. Garvin has written a book about it, and it's a very interesting book. It is a book that he wrote theorizing what America would have done, what America would be like, where what decisions America would have made had Ron Paul been president in the 60s.
Why the 60s?
Because in the 60s, a lot of stuff happened, like Vietnam, civil rights.
Going to the moon.
The what?
Going to the moon.
Going to the moon, all kinds of stuff. And it's a fascinating book, so Mr. Garvin will be on to talk with us about that. I'm joined here by Robert Leonard, Bud Dickman, Margaret Gray, and of course we'll be taking a look at what else was happening in the world overnight. Yeah, I mean, it's not like a news talk show, but just when we say what happened in the world overnight, we generally mean what just happened between my ears overnight, which is about all that I can muster.
Well, you said that you have gone off your diet. Now, what is that?
Yeah.
No, I didn't go off my diet.
What are you going off your diet?
I didn't go off my diet. What happened was they just said, today it was one of those days I was starved, and I ate, and I ate, and I, and just keep in mind, folks, when I say that I ate more calories than I should have today, I wasn't eating, you know.
You like a pie. Were you eating a pie?
I didn't eat a pie, no.
But a chocolate cake or anything like that.
So you didn't glut on bad things?
No. When I say that I go over my calorie count for the day, I'm just overdoing it on the regular stuff that I eat.
What you do? You ate too much popcorn or something? Yeah, right.
Pretty much, yeah.
Phil, all you're eating is popcorn.
No. I eat... You know me. I'm eating salads, and I'm eating the lean Hebrew National hot dogs, and I'm eating those veggie burgers, and I'm eating bananas, you know, and protein powder and stuff like that. So that's really my diet. And just today, I went 1,000 calories. Oh, I was so hungry.
Well, that means you're not going to get fat or anything, right? But it still you have to calm down. Tell me to calm down.
Well, you know, in that sense, Bud, he acts a little bit like you.
Listen, what I'm saying to you, Robert, is this. No, I'm not going to get fat. Tomorrow I got to go out and I got to hump off some of these calories, man.
What do you mean, hump off?
I'm going to go out and run, okay?
Well, that's a double entendre.
It can be taken.
Oh, I'm going to just, like, have sex all day, is that it? Boy, I'll tell you, I've got such an opportunity for that, too, don't I? Man, my life is just full of that, you know.
Well, Phil, I think that if you wanted to, you could just snap your fingers. I don't know what kind of, you know, I don't even want to talk about it, but...
Well, what is it, acting like you smelled something bad?
Well, we talk about a woman above the lady.
Yes, what kind of woman... Phil, I'm not criticizing you, but I don't think you'd have a problem if you wanted to...
Margaret.
Excuse me, I'm not done yet. If you wanted to... Well...
If I wanted to what?
You want to have a lady.
Yeah, if you wanted a lady.
Yeah, if I wanted a lady, what, to have sex with?
Yeah.
I don't think you'd have any problem. The problem that I have is what kind of... You know what I mean? It's just... Oh, God.
Oh, well, yeah, you're right, Margaret. I couldn't get much more than probably just some... Tramp of the road, is that it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, Mr. Hendry.
What are you breathing so hard for?
Well,
what's the matter, man?
What if you got... Remember that lady?
He's thinking of Eileen Wuornos. Jesus.
Are you talking about the lady that killed those guys in Florida?
What if you did?
I guess I'd get shot. But I'm not that dumb. What are you, some kind of a nut... Yeah, I think I'd like to, have sex. I know, I'll drive down an interstate in Florida and just pick up the first chick I see who looks like she's been run through the...
Well, now, don't be unkind, Phil. Eileen, I saw her with makeup, and she's quite lovely.
Uh-huh.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, no comment.
Yeah, man.
Wait, what are you talking about?
I'm standing up for the rights of women. Eileen Mornos, even though she was a murderer and she did take the lives of innocent men, let's just put that aside for a moment. She was quite lovely.
She was not lovely. Are you blind?
I beg your pardon?
Are you blind? She was not lovely.
She would have been lovely, is what I meant to say.
Had what? Had she not been sexually abused, beat up, God knows what else happened to her? I think the kid, she was in a fire or something. How are we on this topic of Eileen Wuornos?
Because I think, well,
what, the two of us would have made a great pair?
I think in another place, in another time.
Me and Eileen Wuornos, is that what you're saying?
Are you nuts or something? You must be out of your... Oh.
Don't talk to me like that.
Don't swing on him just because you came up with a cornball idea like that.
I think you talk about a good book.
Oh, yeah, that'd make a great book. Who would write it? Probably her, because I'd be dead. Me and Eileen Wuornos? What? What drug are you taking? Well, we'll never know, will we?
No, but you know something, Phil? In another place and another time is what I'm saying.
Like I know what you mean, Ms. Gray. Like two ships are passed out in the night, you know?
Yeah.
No, not two ships passed out in the...
Not two ships passed out in the night. It's two ships passing in the night.
In the night, yeah. When it's dark.
Yeah, when it's dark.
Well, what's that mean?
What does it mean? Did they see each other?
I'm going to... See, bud, you know, you say you don't want it, but you act like you do. You say you don't want it, but you act like you do. That's the name of a song.
Yeah?
They're going to play it at your funeral. He seemed like he didn't want it, but he acted like he did, so he got it.
What's that? Sex or something?
You know what? I'm going to the...
Go to the bathroom, because you started your period. I know all about that.
That's none of your business.
You made it our business last night. Shut up, bud. So, in any event, so just remember that, folks, in another place, another time, ships passing in the night, a great item, me and Eileen Wuornos, we would have been a great couple. What? You must have some real respect for me.
I think you might have made an honest woman out of her.
Yeah, that's what I would have done. Ha ha! Me? Are you kidding? If there's one thing that I do, let me just say this and then we'll move on because we have Chris Garvin coming up and his book on Ron Paul. If there's one thing I know about me, if I meet a bad woman, I make her worse. In other words, if I meet a woman who is on the verge of criminal, of becoming a full-fledged criminal, by the time I'm done with her, man, she's a candidate for San Quentin. She's ready to go, man. She's ready to take over any armed gang, you know.
Well, it's not that bad.
It's not? It's not? Have you ever heard of enablers? You know, a lot of you guys are listening. You probably know what we mean when we talk about that because all these psychology shows. That's me. I'm an enabler. I'm a guy. I take care of people. I enable. That, you know, I learned all this crap when I was getting my head shrunk after years and years of all kinds of weird stuff. So, in other words, if I started dating and, God forbid, I married a woman who was already criminally prone, by the time we were done with our marriage, I'd probably be 6 feet under. Or maybe, you know.
Yeah, probably like five different suitcases.
Yeah, like Henry, the Portrait of the Killer.
Right, I'd be in five different suitcases all over the country, and she'd be on some mass murder spree.
Phil, the thing I was trying to say about you and Eileen Wuornos is I thought you might civilize her.
And what I'm telling you is no, I'm not going to. No, I wouldn't.
Well, she's dead now. No.
I'm not talking about that, Margaret. I'm simply saying... She would have been worse. Had she met me and married me, she would have slaughtered thousands.
She probably would have been Hitler or something.
Oh, would you get real?
Not too far off, I don't think. All right, Chris Garvin next. What would the country be like today had Ron Paul been president and Ron Paul, more to the point, Ron Paul's political philosophies and points of views and attorneys general... And all of those weird plural. Anyway, what would the country be like if Ron Paul had been president in the 60s? The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be back to answer that question, which nobody's been asking. So we've asked the question, and we're going to answer it right after this.
Truth is our
bitch. We're talking about Eileen Wuornos.
The Phil Hendry Show.
But I'm not going to explain it to you, you idiot. We'll be right back.
world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And don't forget, we're online at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. If you want to join us, you can join us watching a video cast of the show. Just go to philhenryshow.com and pick up a backstage pass and access thousands of hours of archived radio, going back over a decade, 5,000 hours of full radio shows, our radio show, and every day you have our video cast and the podcast of our show. And, of course, free, we have the Phil Henry podcast, which is about a 30-minute podcast we do daily, and the new Bobby Dooley podcast. And a reminder that, the Bobby Dooley podcast has dropped a new one today. Bobby and who is it, Margaret?
It is Sugar Ray Leonard, and I hear it is just wonderful. Bobby and Sugar Ray Leonard, the great boxing champion.
Yeah, Sugar Ray Leonard, the great former middleweight champion of the world, is Bobby's special guest this week on the podcast, the Bobby Dooley podcast. All right, coming up on the line here with us is Chris Garvin. Mr. Garvin is a political consultant and more recently a writer, the author of a book called Through the Eyes of Ron, An Alternate Reality. What would America be like if Ron Paul were president in the 60s? And Chris, Mr. Garvin, thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Mr. Henry.
Why the idea of a book about Ron Paul and one about him being president in the 1960s?
Well, the idea germinated with me when I was talking to one of the editors that... at the press we were working at, and Teldon Press, and also one of my friends who had been working with the people at the Spot Blog, which is a news blog and a political blog, and people were talking about Ron Paul in the same way that they talk about Ronald Reagan, which was the trajectory of the country and how the country might change or how the country might look had there been that kind of an influence. Ron Paul represents, for a lot of people, such a divergence and such a complete change of attitude and view in American politics that I thought it would be an interesting exercise to apply his ideas, his philosophies, to pivotal moments in American history, and to see what kind of a country we would have as the result. And I picked the 1960s because it is relatively recent, and so a great many of us remember the 1960s, and it's also a decade that was an explosive one. There's no question that it was a decade of milestones, great social change, attitudes toward the military, toward government, toward family. Social as well as political issues arose and were forever morphed in this country, sending the country down a different path, if you will. So all of this was going into my thinking when I started writing the book.
Give me an example of the book, of what you look at in the book.
All right. Well, what we do is we break down the major events and major issues of the day in the 1960s: civil rights, the race for space, the Vietnam War, some subcategories of civil rights, because when we address the issue of civil rights, we're basically talking about the issue of the rights of African Americans. But there were some subcategories that we also viewed, which was the topic of women's rights, as well as the rights of gay people, as well as the emerging issue of students' rights, free speech, and so forth. And we applied the Ron Paul philosophy to each of those.
Well, what is the Ron Paul for people who are, you know, because I don't want to get into a whole thing. Ron Paul is a very obviously he's a very intelligent man. He's looked at issues in very specific ways, monetary as well as social, as well as every other facet of American life. So I don't want to get into the you know, the specifics of how he would deal with, like, the Federal Reserve, you know?
No, and we don't either in the book. What we do in the book is we look at issues that can be grasped readily, front page kinds of things that we think people would understand. To give you an example, the race for space. In a Ron Paul presidency in the 1960s, I don't think you can argue with the supposition that a race for space, any kind of program, having to do with federal dollars being funneled into a space program was just not going to happen the way we saw it happen under a Kennedy, under a Johnson, and under a Nixon. Ron Paul was just not and would not commit dollars to something like that. So the race for space simply would not have happened. The Russians would have had that field to themselves. There is a very good chance.
Would we have not been in space at all?
I don't see a Ron Paul presidency supporting, and if he, of course, had a Congress that backed him up, but I don't even see a space program that's led exclusively by a Congress without the backing of a president ever really, if you'll pardon the pun, taking flight. I don't think it would have happened. So the Russians would have had that field all to themselves.
So there wouldn't have been a Mercury, a Gemini, nothing?
No, Ron Paul has stated over and over and over again that he is not going to waste the American people's money, and I think he would see something like that as a waste of money.
So let me just ask you this: what would have been the consequences?
Well, the consequences, we would have saved the money, but we also certainly would not have developed, for instance, the race for space and the going into outer space. Helped develop so many different things, inventions. I'll give you an example. The rechargeable battery was the result of a necessity that space flight and space missions presented. So we wouldn't have developed things like that. Would the Russians have? I don't know. Would some other nation have stepped into the breach and gone into space? Would it have been France, for instance, which already was aggressively testing nuclear weapons? Would it have been India, for instance, which was looking to break out a profile, an international profile of its own? Would it have been Israel? I don't. The Japanese? I don't know. But it wouldn't have been America.
So America would not have gone into space. We would not have developed certain things like rechargeable batteries.
No, we would not have had, in other words, that profile. The Russians would have. Is that good? Is that bad? I'll leave that decision to you.
All right, what about civil rights?
We looked very carefully at civil rights under a Ron Paul presidency. And Mr. Paul, or a President Paul, no question, personally, would be in favor, obviously, of the people having equal rights in this country. But being a not a federalist, but more of a states' rights president, and that would have put him more into court, sort of a James Buchanan camp in that sense, there would have been no real direct intervention. And so you would have seen the states working out this issue of civil rights. I don't know what would have happened if the lunch counter issue would have been solved in a way in which you would have had blacks allowed to eat at a segregated lunch counter that was increasingly had better service. I don't know. I think Ron Paul would have lent his weight to something like that, though.
And Ron Paul would have lent his weight to what? I mean, you're talking about either people have the right to sit at a lunch counter or not.
Well, I think Ron Paul, being, as I said, the non-intervention president, he would have, had he been president during the civil rights, he would have supported blacks sitting at a lunch counter, but he would not have pushed the point. He would have, in a letter of, and what you can do as president, you can send a letter of it, an advisory letter. Here's an idea. This is what I think you should do. It's none of my business, if you want to put it in very plain English, and said something like, why don't you keep the blacks separate, but increase make the service better, lower the prices. In other words, make it more, at Ron Paul being a capitalist at heart, you know, make it more economically beneficial for the black to sit at a lunch counter separate, you see.
So, yeah, but how do you do? I mean, in other words, I don't want to interfere with you guys, but you've got a social problem here. People are boycotting. They're not using your store. But you want to keep lunch counters separate. So here's my answer. You can improve the service to black people but still keep them separate. And what if people kept boycotting?
Well, then the businesses go out of business, you see. And then after the businesses went out of business, then they'd say, well, we've got to let the blacks sit at an integrated counter or we're going to have to get out of the department store business. Just get the hell out of the department store give it back over to the Northerners. Because obviously we don't know how to be in the department store business without having all hell breaking loose down here. And I think that's what you would have seen, Phil.
All right, Chris Garvin is with us, the author of Through Ron's Eyes, a look at a world, an America, in the 1960s had Ron Paul been president. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Is this interesting
Phil
or is it boring?
This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
And it is the world famous Phil Henry Show. On the phone with us here is Chris Garvin. His book, Through Ron's Eyes, Tracks an America, an Alternate Reality America, that he's writing about if Ron Paul were president of the United States. If Ron Paul was president in the 60s, and what would our country be like? Wow, that was, what happened there, bud?
That might have been, I don't know, maybe, you know, well, I don't be alternate reality or something.
Okay, fine. Chris... we also want to get some phone calls on the air, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk here with Chris Garvin. So we were talking about civil rights. What would civil rights be like with Ron Paul?
Well, I think, Phil, in our book we mentioned that the civil rights fight in America in the 60s would definitely have been one that would be supported individually by Ron Paul, but as a president, there would be very little he would feel he could do because he is someone who's loath to involve the federal powers, per se, in state issues that he, you know, and he would perceive that as a state's rights issue. So I think you'd have ideas, letters of advisement from the president saying, have you tried this, have you tried that? Now, I know that what I said about can you improve the service and lower the prices at a segregated counter, and it may be a bad idea. But ultimately what happens is the boycott takes place, no one goes to the store, and then the department store goes out and tries to get more white customers to make up for the black customers that aren't going there, you see? And so they go out and double their ads in white areas and put on specials that would appeal to the white and sell things that would appeal to the white because they know that the black is not going to shop there. Now, what that does is it eliminates the need for a segregated lunch counter or to have any black customer services. You get all the whites coming to your store.
Well, where were the whites shopping before?
Well, again, where they were shopping, I'm just talking about in Ron Paul's mind what would work.
No, I understand that. So in Ron Paul's mind, let the economic forces take place. The black people boycott the stores. The stores go out and get more whites. That's not what happened, though.
Well, that's not what happened because the federal government got involved when the black boycott took place and there were no blacks, and the stores panicked and said, we better just get rid of that segregated lunch counter. Let's install new drinking fountains. Let's install new toilets. Make the whole thing more conducive to equal integration because we don't know what the federals are going to do. So they were running scared, you see.
And well, isn't that better?
That's not my job. My book simply is to give you an idea of what the country would be like under a Ron Paul presidency.
So under a Ron Paul presidency, there would have been more advertising for white customers.
Yeah, the department stores, having been boycotted, would look for more whites. The whites then would come in from the outer areas where they were shopping, and they would be induced to come to the central urban areas to shop because they were hanging on the edges of the third and fourth ring suburbs doing their shopping in the new strip malls that were coming up. That would eliminate strip malls. More whites would be downtown, and you would have a distinctly white downtown.
Now, where are the black people?
The black people would move. They'd move to the north. And so, ultimately, under a Ron Paul presidency, you would have the southern states mostly white, the northern states mostly black, and the western states would be black, white, you know, a sprinkling of everyone. That's what it would look like.
All right, we're talking to Chris Garvin. Let's go to a phone call here. Robert Green from Buena Park. Bob, how are you?
Phil, I'm doing very good. I'm listening to this gentleman talking, and I'm doing a little late night cleaning up here in the store. And your name is Garvin, right?
Yes, it's Chris Garvin, sir.
My name is Bob Green. I'm the CEO of Fraser Foods here in Buena Park, California. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I'm afraid I have not. I'm not a Californian, by the way.
Oh, really? Where are you from?
I'm originally from Birmingham, Alabama, but I live in Washington, D.C. now.
All right. So you grew up with you grew up white?
Yes, I'm white and grew up white.
All right. So you had you lived in that society, right?
I did. I lived in a segregated society, and it wasn't anything that I liked, but I didn't have much say in it. I was only, at the time, 6 months old, and then my parents took me and my sister, and they moved to Washington, D.C.
Well, what you're saying here is, first of all, I got to tell you, and I don't mean any offense, this is a really boring interview you're doing here, Phil. I'm sorry to...
Well, in what way?
Well, the gentleman, I thought it would be interesting to hear about what Ron Paul...
Well, what would make it better? I always believe in being proactive.
Well, what would make it better is if you just said some stuff that was interesting. You know, what you're saying is...
Well, what isn't interesting about it?
Well, you know what I'm saying. I mean, he's saying, here's the way the country would be with Ron Paul as president. Are you sure you wrote a book?
Yes, I wrote a book. It's not a very good book, maybe. Maybe you don't think it's a good book. Maybe a lot of people wouldn't think it's a good book. Maybe I wouldn't think it's a good book had I not written it.
Well, what kind of research? In other words, the stuff you're saying here, is this what's in your book?
A lot of what I'm saying here is not in the book. I'm trying to improve what's in... I'm improving on it by talking more interesting about it. Because what's in the book, I'll admit to you, is not all that good. So I said, well, maybe the whites would take over. In the book, I said the stores would close down and it would cause integration. But I thought that sounded too namby-pamby, you know?
Well, yeah, but doesn't that make sense?
No, I don't know, but I had to say... So I, on the show here with Mr. Henry, I said that... Maybe there'd be a full takeover by whites.
Well, that doesn't sound any more interesting than anything else, you know. And so, all right, so Ron Paul doesn't believe in outer space. All right, big deal. I mean, how would that make the country different?
That's a good question. How would that make America different today?
Well, Phil, before you answer, Mr. Garvin. Mr. Garvin?
Yes, I'm right here.
Before you answer, Phil, I don't know that you're in any position to start, you know, hey, how would that... I'm here trying to improve this, you know?
Well, so your point is what?
You're doing a bad job interviewing this guy.
Well, all right. I thank you very much.
Oh, okay, so you're going to hang up on me.
Well, no, I would like to hear what... Go ahead, ask me the question.
All right, go ahead, ask the question. Did you come on here to insult me, or, you know?
No, I didn't come on here to insult you. I came on here to try to get... to try to... be interested in what you're doing. Otherwise, I don't want to have anything. There's a lot of stuff on TV, you know. And
well, you know what? You can go watch that if you want to.
You're right. I could. But instead, I called up a guy that I respect by the name of Phil Henry, and I'm trying to save his show tonight. So, Garvin, is that your name? Garvin, right?
Yeah, Chris Garvin.
Give me something, anything. Give me a reason to keep listening to the Phil Henry show tonight.
That's, you know something, that's just you calling up trying to insult me, that's all.
No, it is not. There's a lot of people out there. Ask your crew.
All right, I will. Margaret? Okay, so you agree with him, huh?
Well, I agree that it could be a stronger segment. I do.
Yeah.
Well, Phil, I think this is my fault, too.
No, it's not your fault. I should ask, as Bob said, some better questions.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You need to ask better questions and make what comes out more. In other words, if you ask the better questions, what comes out of this guy is going to be interesting, and then people will say, oh, I want to listen to this, and they won't say what they're saying now, which is, I need to get onto another radio station because this sucks, you know.
Well, Phil, I think it's my fault. Let me just say this. If Ron Paul were president of the United States in the 1960s, geez, that's a tough one.
You wrote a book about it, sir. You wrote a book about it, okay?
No, you're right. Yeah, you wrote a book about it, so what do you mean that's a tough one? I'm trying to improve on what I had in the book.
Well, what did you have in the book?
What I told you.
In other words, what you had in the book was if the black... What? What did you have in the book?
About what?
About the civil rights.
In the book, I said if the blacks boycotted the stores, then the stores would close down, and a lot of the towns would be ghost towns, or they'd have new stores that were integrated.
And you changed that here on the show to...
You changed it on the show to say that it would all be white stores.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You don't think... Listen, I can tell you, I don't have an ego about these things. If you think the book needs to be better, Phil, what I can do is go back to the galleys and write better, and also write more interesting and better stuff, and give it back to my publisher, and have it republished, and we'll pull everything off of the shelves as it is, and I'd be back on your show, say, 6 months, Phil. Does that sound good?
I don't know, Chris. I mean, you know...
Well, Phil's being polite. No, that doesn't sound good. I don't think Phil should have you back on the show, because you're not a very good writer. You're not a very good... Nothing that you do is good. You don't talk good.
Well, I haven't done a lot of these.
Well, you may not have... You don't talk good. You don't... There's a lot of stuff that you just don't do, man. And so...
And by the way, I've got a message here. We've had a technical message that I have to update. Can we take a break right now?
Well, I don't know. I want to stay on the line here and talk a little bit with...
Okay, that's fine, Bob. Hold on. We'll be right back. We have a technical... A lot of you guys are not getting the iOS stream tonight, I understand. We are looking into that. Stick around, and we will... tell you what we have found out. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
And the only thing I said to Mr. Henry...
All right, hold on, guys. We're back on the line here with Chris Garvin and Robert Green. I apologize to you, Chris, and to you, Bob, because we've got a technical issue with our iOS customers tonight not getting the stream on their iPhones.
What I was saying to Chris is that you have a lot to do, and you've got a big job to do, Phil. And when he comes on your program and he's got a book that he wrote that he didn't write good...
Well, I'm not saying I didn't do my best.
No, I know you didn't do your best. I know you did do your best, but you didn't do what your best is. As I like to say in my business, your best ain't, you know, it ain't squat, if I could use that word.
I understand.
And I know you're a writer and you're a political consultant. Is that what you do?
Yes, sir.
Well, you ought to go back to doing that, because you couldn't write your way out of a wet paper sack. From what you're telling me.
Well, I mean, I think we need to be fair to Chris. He came on. It's a lofty, it's an ambitious project to sort of enter this alternate reality.
Well, don't baby talk the guy, okay? Talk straight to him. He's a man, you know.
I'm talking straight to him. I'm saying it's a very difficult job, though, you know.
Well, let me just say this. If I let you guys down tonight, I'm sorry. I wrote a book called Through the Eyes of Ron.
And hold on. That's another thing. That title is... And to use the word that the kids use, and I don't mean any offense to our the gay people that are listening, but I'm saying it's as gay, you know.
And what do you mean gay?
I mean it's stupid. Through the Eyes of Ron. It sounds like a romance novel or something. Am I right, Phil?
Well, I don't have any issue with the title. The issue that I have is with the content, you know.
Yeah, let's get back to that. So you write a book, and what would happen if Ron Paul was president and there was a space, you know, and we didn't go into outer space? And basically what you said was, not much. The Russians might go to the moon and they might not, but other than that, nothing would happen. Oh, we wouldn't have rechargeable batteries. Is that it?
Well, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. Your book blows up, you know.
All right, look, we don't have to talk, you know.
Go ahead, hit me with it. I this is the only way I'm going to learn.
Your book just blows up. It blows a whole petting zoo. Every animal in it. Phil, wouldn't you agree?
I'm not going to characterize things that way, thank you, Bob.
You wouldn't agree with that.
I'm not going to characterize things like that, okay?
Margaret, how about you?
Well, I agree with Phil. I think that's a little rough to say it blows a petting zoo. Is that what you said?
Yes, because I want this man to understand how much he has destroyed this segment of the Phil Henry Show.
Well, I certainly know what you mean when you say it blows a petting zoo, because I've got an 8-year-old daughter, but... And I would never use that language around her, but I've been to petting zoos.
Well, that's my point, yeah.
And if you're saying an entire petting zoo, then it's a bad book.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a bad book. I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't buy your book, and I wouldn't have you on as a guest again, and I think if Phil does, then he's almost as dumb as you.
Uh-huh.
All right, Bob, I think we've insulted Mr. Garvin about enough.
Well, my intention was not to insult him. My intention was to come on your program and say, would you please put something on your show tonight that I can actually listen to? Otherwise, I got to go somewhere and do something, man, because my time's too valuable than to listen to this guy.
You know something, Bob? I don't think any of this is really necessary. If you didn't like it, you didn't have to call in.
If I didn't like it, I didn't have to. No, you're right. I could just let Phil die. Just sit there and lay the biggest egg in the history of radio.
Not the biggest egg.
Just sit there and lay one of the biggest eggs in the history of radio, and I wouldn't do anything. What kind of friend would that make me?
Well, again, I'm culpable.
All right, we picked over how bad this interview has been. Anything else?
Yeah, well, you gotta hang up on a guy.
I agree with what's his name there. Yeah, you gotta hang up on him.
I'm not hanging up on anybody, okay?
Well, all right, well, you want me to...
I want you to get... Yeah, you can hang up.
Well?
I'm not hanging up on this man, Mr. Garvin. Are you there, sir?
Yes, well, I'm right here.
Okay, I'm not hanging up on you. I appreciate you being on the show. I will say good evening to you.
Right, but what about my idea of coming back on your program later?
You know something? Just why don't you write us a letter or have your publicist write us a letter, okay? You've got a very good publicist. They're a New York public relations firm, right?
Yes, they are.
So, and the glossy cover on the book, I mean, they put a lot of money into this.
Yes, they did. It's a reputable publisher. So somewhere between, being signed by this company and me actually writing the book, something went wrong.
I would say so, because you've got a beautiful glossy cover. You've got a reputable public relations outfit. It says future New York Times bestseller on the cover. What is that about?
Well, we figured that we could say that. It's not yet.
All right. Anyway, thank you very much. Through the eyes of Ron.
Well, don't even bother promoting it, because I'm going to have it pulled and I'm going to go back and rework some of these galleys. I think I've benefited greatly.
Yes, sir.
From being on your program.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay, Phil.
So that was Chris Garvin on the show. He wrote a book, and not very well, called Through the Eyes of Ron, about what the country would be like. I don't know.
Well, I don't think there's any need to go over what the book is about, because no one's going to read it, because even he says it's unreadable, so it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, can people still buy it?
No, you're going to have them pulled off the shelf. Didn't you hear him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard him. He said there's not going to be any... Okay.
No, he's having every issue recalled. He's going to rewrite. He said, write it better.
And then put it out.
Yes, I guess.
You want me to book him for June or something?
No, I don't want you to book him at all. I don't want you to book him at all. I don't trust anything that the guy does. And I sure as hell don't need Bob Green calling in and telling me how rotten... You know what I'm going to do, Bob, if you're listening? I think I'm going to come into your store, and I'm going to go into that aisle where, what is it, the international and the... you know those international foods that you have and the delicacies and so forth, the health foods, and you play the Chinese national anthem when the guy comes in to restock? I think I'm going to come in and tell everybody about that. So you look like a real bag of you-know-what, because I'm telling you...
What does he do?
Bob Green is about the most racist. This guy, every time he has his Chinese food restocked at 5 a.m. or whenever the guy
Oh, man.
Yeah, but you think it's funny.
Yeah, it is funny. I got to tell you that. Every time he has his international food section restocked by the Chinese food company or whoever, he plays the Chinese national anthem.
Well, why does he do that?
Yeah, the county keeps good relations with the Chinese.
Yeah, he thinks it keeps good relations with his Chinese food supplier.
By playing the Chinese national anthem.
Yes, yes. So at five, just imagine a store that's not open yet. You know how when you go, have you ever driven by the supermarket? I'm sure you have, we all have. When it's not open yet, but you see all the workers in there and they're stocking shelves or this and that. So the only cars in the parking lot are there, the supermarket workers. And you look inside and you maybe see some of the vendors and some of the people they do business with. Well, that's when Bob plays the Chinese national anthem in the store on the PA. So the guy stocking the Egg Foo Young, you know.
Egg Foo Young is not Chinese. I think that's a made-up American Chinese dish.
Well, whatever, the chow mein or something.
That's racist, too.
What do you mean it's racist, too? Chow mein?
I think that's not racism.
Oh, horse dung. We're going to be right back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show next hour with more news and views, and we'll keep an eye on the iOS feed tonight for you guys using your iPhone, and we'll get to the bottom of this.
Phil Henry.
And Chris Garvin will never be back on our show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Welcome back here to the world of what I was going to, should we call the show that, the world of Phil Henry? I was going to say the Phil Henry Show. I was also going to say the world famous Phil Henry Show, and it came out the world of.
Wonderful World of Phil.
What about the wonderful world of Disney? Well, not Disney, but.
Yeah, the wonderful world of Disney.
Because my name isn't Disney.
No, but I mean the wonderful, what was it called? Wonderful World.
Yeah, it was called the Wonderful World. Great. So the Wonderful World of Phil is what it would be called if that's what I wanted to call it, but I don't. But that's what almost came out of my mouth. And why is that? I don't know.
Because you wanted to say world famous and Phil Henry.
Right. But really, more to the point, I wanted to say it is turning into kind of a world unto its own because, you know, as I've tried to say to the audience here over the last 6 years, 6 years I've been telling you guys this. 6 years I've been saying we're in the middle of a, you know, when we say we're in the middle of a media revolution, I'm not just whistling Dixie here, man. It's not some fancy way of saying, wow, things sure are tough out there. No, I'm telling you, the whole world, my industry, everything's changing. I'm telling you that there may not be a thing called radio in 10 years. You understand that? I'm sure people understand that. And what do I mean by that? What I mean is this. There is such a shift and such a change in terms of how things are being delivered, how communication is happening, how entertainment is happening, how things are getting to you from us. Me, the professional quote-unquote entertainer slash commentator slash guy on the radio slash aggressive entrepreneur, you know. And things are changing so drastically and quickly and radically that you may one day get up and say, gee, let me turn on the radio, and it doesn't exist any longer. You have to either go to your internet radio or, you know, it's all digitized or something. So the reason why I'm bringing all of this up is there are all kinds of different companies that we're dealing with now. And I am a business owner. I am a individual who owns his own radio show and the means by which it is delivered. Okay. And that's where it's at. There's no radio station that I work for. I don't work for any radio station. So now I'm dealing with all these companies. One of the kinds of companies I'm dealing with are guys that deliver video images to mobile phones. Now, I know that doesn't sound like it should be a tough thing, but apparently it is, because Apple doesn't use flash media. They use something else. So we have to find people that will take the signal and turn it into something that is good for Android phones, for iPhones, for all kinds of platforms and devices. And we have to do that, something that's affordable. And you got to make sure the company knows what it's doing. Well, I'm telling you, you'd be surprised. Because it's just like everything else. It's just like buying a car. It's just like finding a car and getting a good service plan. The guys talk a real good game, and then when it comes time to delivering, and I mean, I'm just in the middle of this. I'm just telling you, because I know a lot of you people who are listening tonight, and I don't say you people.
You have to be careful with the you people, Phil.
I'm not saying it racially.
Yeah, but, you know, even if you say you people, everyone's go, what, you think yours doesn't smell bad in the morning? You know,
Yeah, that's what they're saying, bud.
No, I'm saying you people.
I didn't mean it racially.
Well, all right, so you didn't mean it racially. Do you mean it economically? Do you mean it in terms of... It could be a lot of things, Phil.
My listeners, okay? My listeners, a lot of my listeners, you're in business, you know what I mean. And so, these are very interesting times, very interesting times. And it's very competitive, too. So, you know, if someone says to me, yes, Mr. Henry, we can deliver the video cast of your radio show to iPhones by using our fantastic and groovy thing that we have here, and here's how much it costs, and then it ain't what it is, then guess what? Goodbye! Because I'll tell you, if you guys think you're going to make your millions getting a contract with Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, or the Irving Farquhar Intergalactic Radio Show, which is way bigger and has more money, you be my guest, man. You go ahead, you go out, you hit the ball out of the park and get that big money account and get rich and famous in 2 seconds without breaking a sweat and just keep making the same mistakes everybody else has been making over the years. And your ass is going to be on the street looking for cigarette butts and wondering what happened. And I'll be down the road dealing with a company that wants to deal with guys like me. That's the way the game is played now.
Well, what do you mean their ass is going to be on the street? I mean, what they're doing is they're trying to make a living, too.
If you're going to try to make a living, if you're a company and you're waiting for just the big money contract, we're not going to mess with that because that's not a very big contract. We want to go to the big guy. I'm telling you, you're making a huge mistake. You're just, there ain't no such thing anymore. That's what everybody's been talking about. There's no such thing as buying a house and flipping it and making another couple of hundred grand. There's no such thing as the quick money anymore. So forget it, baby. All right, what do we got here, bud?
This is the Revolution Televised.
You might be surprised what Cubans are watching. Over the past 2 decades, the U.S. government has spent some $500 million to beam news and commentary with an anti-Castro bent into Cuba, but the programming hasn't exactly been a rating success, because it sucks. So how do Cuban TV viewers reconcile these dueling impressions? Well, wait a minute. The Cuban government controls all media on the island and views the broadcast as enemy propaganda, so it jams the signals. The Miami-based stations, radio and TV Martí, oh, yeah, Radio and TV Martí. I remember this.
What's that?
That the anti-Cuba?
Yeah, it's anti-Castro stuff that has been coming out of Miami for a great many years. They've spent more money trying to overcome this by transmitting from moving airplanes, but the broadcast reached less than 1% of Cuba's 11 million residents, according to a recent report. Meanwhile, hours and hours of subversive American programming fill Cuba's airwaves each day, attracting millions of viewers on the island with shows like Desperate Housewives, Friends, and Grey's Anatomy.
I don't understand. So the propaganda doesn't make it.
The propaganda that, you know, yeah, the what they call the American propaganda on Radio Martí is not getting in because it's being jammed by the Cubans. But what the Cubans are not jamming are American television shows like Desperate Housewives, Friends, and Grey's Anatomy. Cuba is broadcasting these shows. With Radio and TV Martí and its $34 million annual budget facing growing skepticism in Congress, the Miami station's defenders insist they're helping to break the Cuban government's monopoly on information. The Cuban government ain't got no monopoly on information because they're one of the things they're doing is they're piping in Grey's Anatomy, Desperate Housewives, and Bodies by Jake.
You kidding?
Yes, I don't know what they, you know.
Are they really?
No, they're not.
Bodies by Jake.
No, they're not. I don't know.
Well, what are they doing?
I don't know, Margaret. They don't have Bodies by Jake. Whatever they're doing. In other words, what Cuba is allowing to air are television shows that emanate and are produced in America, and they are allowing this because the people dig the hell out of the shows, and so it gets people to watch. And I guess they aren't aware of the fact that in and of itself, that's a kind of propaganda. It is a kind of way of selling a democratic society's values. And they may think that I know a lot of these countries, totalitarian and communist countries in the past have said, this is a fantastic way to show our people how decadent and degenerate the West is. That never works. That never works. Never. People don't look at that and say, oh, yeah, thank you very much for showing me how decadent America is, because it's just, wow, it's really shocking the hell out of me, man, as I look at the housewives there in the baubles and the bangles, the beads, the lives, the houses, the husbands, the martini lunches. You know, that really sucks. Sure, I'm glad I'm in Cuba. It don't work like that. Every night, Cuban television viewers are treated to programming lineups loaded with contradictory messages. From 6:30 to 8:30 or so, the government's news and commentary predictably depict the United States as a racist, dysfunctional, and violent mess, highlighting all the day's negative stories. Then the same, in other words, they just, you know, load up the CNN. And anyway...
Really?
I don't know. Then the same state-owned TV channels fill their primetime slots with Hollywood movies and American programs loaded with images of prosperous, fat American households, brilliant American doctors, fair-minded American courts of law, all populated by exceedingly healthy and charismatic actors of every race and ethnicity.
So, in other words, what they're doing is... What are they doing?
What they're doing is they're putting on stuff the people will watch. They're putting on stuff the people will watch. And they're not even... They're putting on stuff the people will watch, and before they watch it, they're telling everyone what a toilet bowl it all comes from.
Yeah, well, they're saying if it was a toilet bowl, then what's coming out of the toilet bowl is good.
Yeah, that's a that is a contradictory message if you think about it.
Of course it is, you know. I mean, well, maybe I used the wrong image.
No, now, hold on. If you're saying, or they're saying, that American culture is a toilet bowl, and then they are serving up something that people want to eat, what is that about?
Toilet bowl is a wrong... Well, yeah, that's what they're saying. They're saying that what comes out of our toilet bowl is edible.
What? I mean, that's... You know.
Hey, bud, do me a favor. Don't yell in my ear, okay?
Nah, no kidding, man.
What?
You're all like this. What? It's right in my left ear, okay?
I can hear you over here, bud, fine.
Bud, you talking about stuff?
Yeah, I'm talking about stuff. What about it?
You're going that the Chinese are piping in toilet bowl TV.
I didn't say Chinese.
Cuban, man. I mean, Cubans are piping in toilet bowl.
The Cubans are piping in American television that the Cuban people want to watch. You can't keep people away from what they want. I don't give a damn how totalitarian a government is. And if the people want to watch, look, American television beams into Cuba anyway. Miami television stations are going to get into Cuba anyway. The Cuban government would rather be showing the Cuban people the shows they want them to see. So they show them the stuff they know the people are going to want to see anyway, which is Desperate Housewives and Grey's Anatomy and Walking Dead.
Really? I don't think I'm Walking Dead.
I don't know that Walking Dead would... I think Walking Dead would actually be a very good show. Why don't they show that?
I don't know. It would be a good show because they could say, here it is. This is the future of capitalism right here. This is the American consumer. Once the bacteria gets loose from the lab, boom, there it is, a ghoul, you know.
That'd be good.
Yeah, tell you something, Cuba, if you're listening, which I know you're not, but maybe you are, you got to be out of your minds that you ain't pumping that walking dead, man, because that's the perfect message to send to the Cuban people. They'll be entertained by it. You could say, and look what happens if you are a consumer material sucking American. Sooner or later, you become soulless, you become a ghoul, and you can walk and crawl without your leg. You're the undead. And the next thing you know, they won't want to have nothing to do with us. No way, man. Mm-mm.
Well, I think that's a little wishful thinking.
Maybe. According to Javier Torres, a 32-year-old Havana resident, I think Cuban TV's main goal is educational, he said. His only major gripe about state-run programming is the lack of diverse viewpoints on news and commentary programs. His favorite show is the prison drama Oz. Yeah, I'll bet it is.
What does that mean?
I don't know. His favorite show is the prison drama Oz. So they're going to show that. They show American prison shows. All right, let's take a break and dig into this further, because this is fascinating stuff. Look at this. The number one show in Cuba, 101 Dalmatians. No, the number one show in Cuba, Gilmore Girls.
Really?
I don't know. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
We are trying to get on air in Cuba.
Bill Hendry Show.
You know, I got to be careful, man. I'm one of these guys, I fire off emails and then I regret that I ever wrote the email. Do you ever do that?
No, I mean exactly what I say.
You mean exactly what you say. When you fire off an email, and you say to somebody, why, you low life. By the way, Don Berman's appearance on our show the other night, that quote of his went viral.
Which one?
That's where he said, you lousy whore.
Yes, when he was on our show, he was actually, it's Los Alamitos, he was rooting home some horse he bet, Sassafras.
Oh, that's, and he kept calling the animal, you know something, I can't put up with much more of that.
Well, that was only the one time we had on. He was kept saying, come on, you dirty whore. That's what he was calling the horse that he had bet.
Oh, I expect the horse going to win.
Well, the horse's not going to get all offended by it, you know what it means.
Then why are people root? Why do they root on it?
Why do they root on the horse? You mean why do they root for the horse?
Yeah, why do they root for the horse?
Because that's what people do, you know.
Yeah, but a horse doesn't understand.
They're not really yelling at. Yes, I know the horse doesn't understand.
Oh. Well, it's a good question, Phil. Why would people cheer for a horse if they don't? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Because human beings are like that. We like to yell and cheer and scream and. And blow our guts loose. You know, what do you want from me? He was yelling for his horse, Sassafras, calling it a dirty whore. And that isn't because the horse was going to get offended. That was the weird part about that for me. The weird part about that for me was that he would just say that. In other words, it's kind of a negative sense, isn't it? If you're rooting home a horse and you want the horse to do well... And you're calling it a dirty whore. I mean, what does that say?
But probably he's not used to winning or anything.
Yeah, he's not. He's probably not a very lucky gambler.
Well, that could be. But in any event, when we quoted him on the show the other night, it was that. We quoted that on Facebook, and the whole thing went viral. Brad Rifkin is with us in Las Vegas tonight here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And Brad, I know you run an advertising agency. You also are a gambler, but you're not an addicted gambler. You live in Las Vegas, huh?
Yeah, you know, when you live in a place like Las Vegas, Phil, you definitely are definitely prone to gambling, however innocent. And I enjoy it. I like to go and bet football. I do the sports book and things like that. So it's nothing. It's not too serious. But to the point that you were just making there about rooting home a horse. You had a football coach on your program, the high school coach, who I think has been on your show talking about that.
Talking about what?
Well, he was talking about the fans in the stands when they root for someone. And he took great offense to the fact that most high schools and most colleges, as you know, have cheerleaders. And the cheerleaders are going to stand there on a sideline and they're going to say, go, go, go. And score, score, score. The same can be said for basketball in college and high school basketball, where they say score, 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 this kind of thing. It can be viewed as offensive to a very hardworking team. And so if you're yelling for your horse...
Why is that offensive?
Yes.
Well, I mean, don't you think the basketball team knows that they need to score? That's number one.
Of course they do, but these are the fans.
Oh, hold on. That's number one. Number two, don't you think the football team knows they got to go down the field? So why do they have some kid screaming at them and yelling at them, and they've got girls there that are cheerleaders? My daughter was a cheerleader for exactly 1 week until I saw the routine, and I said, that's the end of that. Because here's my daughter engaged in telling the team, hey, go, score, score, which is absolutely asinine because they already know that's what they got to do. So why she stands there in a little short skirt and under with nothing underneath but her underwear, and I'm going to have my daughter out there, she's turning flips, and she's showing the underwear to guys I sure don't want her to show underwear to. That's another thing. You know, not for nothing, but if you have a daughter who is a cheerleader and you know guys that are at the game, other friends of yours, fathers that you know, do you want your daughter showing her underwear to those guys? So they...
Hold on for a minute, man, because I think, you know, for a guy that bets on sports, I don't think you get it at all.
No, I do get it. That's the point.
No, I don't think you do. Okay?
Well, he's talking about his daughter turning a flip.
Yeah, a lot of times the dress goes over their head.
But that's not underwear. That's a leotard.
Yeah, what do you mean underwear?
You can call it look, let me tell you something. A rose by any other name, the poet said, would still smell as sweet. and a pair of underwear, and I don't mean my daughter now. I'm just talking about like you or me, Phil. Our underwear, you could call it anything, but it still smells at the end, you know, when you got to wash it, right?
Yeah.
What's wrong?
There's nothing wrong. Where are you going, man? So in other words, a pair of underwear is what?
A pair of underwear worn by you and I is going to stink to high heaven at the end of the day.
Yeah, so what?
You were talking about your daughter.
Yeah, well, okay, but the point, you're right, I used a bad example, but the point I'm trying to make is a leotard by any other name is still my daughter with her dress over her head and guys that I know from the track staring at it. That's never going to do. That's never going to wash in my world, in your world, or anybody else's world.
Brad Rifkin is with us here on the Phil Henry Show. He's the head of Rifkin Advertising in Las Vegas, Nevada. He also is a man who likes to bet on sporting events. We're discussing here this idea of cheering for the horse in the state. Don Berman was on our show. Do you know Don?
Yeah, I do know Don very well, yeah.
All right, Don was on our show and was yelling something that a lot of people took offense at. He was live on the air with us, and he was cheering for a horse, calling it "you dirty whore." Now, a couple of people, you know, on my staff here were questioning, the horse can't hear that, so that's not offensive to the horse.
Of course it's not offensive to the horse. No, it's not offensive to the horse. But to say you, so there's no point in getting upset about it. That's what I'm saying, see?
All right, but, if you don't want a little cheerleader saying go, 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 because you know that that's what you got to do and that's offensive to you that she's telling you that, then isn't it offensive to the jockey to have the horse that he's riding? Well,
no, Phil, the jockey don't care if you call his horse a whore. Wow.
You kidding?
All right, hold on. We'll be right back. We'll discuss this in depth. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
You're going to do what? You're going to discuss this in depth?
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake, Phil, I mean, I don't...
Phil, you can call a horse anything. The horse ain't going to be able to do nothing about it. The horse don't even talk English.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back here. Brad Rifkin on the line with us here. Just one other thing before we get back to this discussion on sports and the idea of who gets offended. All I said was that Don Berman said, "Come on, you dirty whore," to a horse that he'd bet on.
Right. And I don't disagree. I mean, if people were offended by that, then most likely they don't like the fact that someone could hear it in the stands, maybe, or they didn't like the fact you said it on your radio program, Phil. But again, we have to reiterate, the horse can't hear it. The jockey, it doesn't matter the jockey. I don't know how long you've been around horse racing. I know you grew up in a horse racing town.
Yeah, I grew up in Arcadia.
All right, so you grew up around the Santa Anita racetrack. And so, you know, these jockeys are tough guys. I mean, they're little guys, and I think that fools a lot of people into thinking, well, there's probably no tougher athlete out there than a jockey because, you know, these are guys that are on top of a horse that's running hell-bent for leather. That animal is going full speed, and you are in a pack of them, and you are trying to control this animal around other guys that are trying to do the same thing. One false move, you go down, you could die, you know, and I don't know of any tackle yet in football where there is a probability or a very high possibility that you're going to die when the tackle is made. But if you're a jockey and you're on top of a thoroughbred racehorse in the backstretch going full tilt, and that horse goes down for whatever reason, there is a good chance you're going to be seriously injured, maybe lose the locomotion in your limbs, or you'll die. Now, you know, I don't know of any athlete in the world that has to face that, other than a race car driver. But even still, a race car driver is, you know...
Race car drivers are protected with roll cages and...
Yeah, they got a lot of things around them. So, yeah, our jockeys, thoroughbred jockeys, are tough dudes.
Well, I agree. I agree with you. And I've met a few of them down through the years, and they are tough guys. And they're very strong, physically strong men. You have to be. But I still don't understand what this has to do with the...
The whole dirty whore thing.
Well, I think that Don Berman yelling something like that in the face of a man like a thoroughbred jockey that is strong and is that kind of resourceful and substantial man, I think it's typical of a glamour push like a Don Berman, you know.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I just think that a glamour boy like a Don Berman is going to sit up in the grandstands, hiding behind his binoculars and yelling dirty whore at a man who may be 4 foot two or whatever, but, you know.
Yeah, he's gonna. He can bring it.
You better believe he can bring it. He's boy, you know. Yeah, and that's very well said, Margaret, because the guy may be 4 foot two and
eyes are blue.
Eyes are blue.
This is the second time you've done that, bud.
But the guy said 4 foot two.
Just because a guy says 4 foot two or 5 foot two doesn't mean you got to come with the line eyes of blue.
That's a song. Is that an old song?
Yes, it's an old 4 foot two, eyes of blue. Oh, what that midget can do for you. I don't know what the song is.
It's Has Anybody Seen My Gal? What is it with you, man?
I don't know. I remember the song as a kid when they say 5 foot two, eyes of blue. What the midget will do for you?
Not what a midget will do for you. First of all, that's a hateful word. Okay?
Why is it hateful?
Phil thinks that's like the N-word for little people.
Oh, will you get out of here, Henry?
I'm telling you that that's what my understanding is, and so I don't want that word used.
Well, you gotta call him. Dwarf?
No, you don't use dwarf either. Little people. Little people. You understand? That's the way it's gonna be in the show. Get it?
My God, Phil, that's...
Little people. Brad?
Yeah, fine. That's okay.
All right. So when you say 5 foot two, eyes of blue, that's a song, man. That's got nothing to do with anything.
Well, I'm just saying to... I'm sorry, but I agree with Phil, but I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
You went 4 foot two.
So I said 4 foot two, so what? That don't mean you got to come with eyes of blue. I could say 4 foot two, and you could have said anything. You know, don't have to rhyme. Jesus.
I can't believe this is the only radio show in the world that has these kinds of conversations.
Well, Phil, I think you invite it when you say the things that you say in the rhythmic manner that you do, you know?
No, I don't know.
When you say 4 foot two, you know...
I didn't sing it like that.
Well, maybe I did. I don't remember.
I think one of you went for... Well, you know that these jockeys are 4 foot two, and then...
Yeah, and then I say, has anybody seen it?
Has anybody seen it?
Ain't that... I don't know.
No, man. The song goes 4 foot two, eyes of blue. Some. Has anybody seen... You know, has anybody seen it?
Not has anybody seen it. Has...
Hey, you know, I got to tell you something, Phil. You're right. It is weird. But you waste more time. Why don't you just blow it off and...
You're right. You're absolutely right.
See, that... Thank you very much for saying that, Brad. I say to Phil all the time... You can get frustrated over the stupidity that pours out of this radio show on a minute-by-minute basis, or you can just keep pushing through it. That's all you can do, Phil. There's a lot of really stupid stuff that gets said on your radio show. Wouldn't you agree?
Margaret?
Just humor me. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
All right. Then why not just push through it the way an icebreaker? Remember those icebreakers you saw on TV that you were so impressed with?
Yeah, the icebreakers at the...
Up at a polar cap?
Yes, Phil saw this show on TV, and he was just going on and on about the icebreakers, how marvelous they were.
I thought it was impressive.
All right. Then you be an icebreaker in the middle of all of these idiots. You be... Because your show, Phil, is locked in an ice cap of... Just, to use your words, in an ice cap of dumbass.
Yeah, I agree.
You agree, huh? Well, thank you, Professor Dickman. You agree.
Well, it's like...
Yeah, no, but Phil, so be the icebreaker, break through it, push through it, walk through that pile of fresh, almost liquid cow dung, and come out smelling fresh.
That's a very good point, Phil. You know, it's like when you do a radio show, and I say this with a great affection for you, Phil, but when you do a radio show... It's like, especially your show, it's like you've got to wade through a very hot, soft cow patty.
All right. God.
Well, but you understand,
Yes, I understand.
And you come out, if you can come out of that smelling fresh as a daisy.
It'll be a miracle.
Why?
Are you kidding? The idea of walking through cow dung and coming out smelling like fresh as a daisy would be a miracle anyway. And if you're saying that this radio show is so steeped in stupidity that's what I got to look forward to, I don't know that I can even survive it. We're talking here with Brad Rifkin. All right, let's get off of this topic, okay?
Well, I mean, you want to get off the calling a horse a whore, yeah. But the fact remains that we've got in this country this epidemic.
Well, let me ask you a question, Brad. You know, I've never been one for cheerleading. I was a cheerleader. I'm glad that I don't have a daughter, and I don't have to deal with that. I have a son, and my son never evidenced any interest in being, you know, on the drill team. My son is a football player. He's not a cheerleader, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally understand.
So I've never had that kind of connection. But, let me just say this. When I was at Penn, and I went to the University of Pennsylvania, we were in the Ivy League, and I would be on the sideline saying, go, 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 go. And to me, that was a logical thing.
It may be logical for you as a cheerleader to say, go, 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 go. That may be fine. But the fact of the matter is, who are you saying that to?
I'm saying it to the football team.
Well, they already know they got to go, go, go. So you leaning on them like that.
What kind of a stupid conversation are we having here?
Why?
Why can't a cheerleader say go, go, go?
Because the football team already knows they got to go, go, go.
Maybe they're not doing it for the football team. They're doing it for the fans.
Well, the fans? What do you mean the fans? The fans? What are you talking about?
Look, the whole idea of cheerleading, you know.
But you don't understand, Phil.
Hold on, bud. The whole idea of cheerleading is to get the crowd involved in exhorting and encouraging the team.
That's my whole point. The team don't need to be encouraged or exhorted, however you want to put it, because these guys play football. That's their game. And you're going to stand there and go, hey, go, go, get a football, get the football, go in for the end zone. Like they look, if I was a football player, I'd look up in the stands and go, who the hell are you talking to? Do you think you're talking to idiots? Of course I know that.
They're not saying that because they are reminded. They're not saying it because you guys don't know. They're saying it.
Yes, why are they saying it? That's a very good point.
They're saying it because they want to say it. I don't know.
Well, guess what? It bugs football players to have some jackass up there with 14 beers in his belly going, go, go, get a field goal. Oh, yeah? What else? What else do I not know? I mean, it's insulting. It's degrading. We live in a day and age, Phil, where people are trying to be more respectful of each other, you know, and respect human rights and the dignity what we have. And when you're standing there, you know, and you're...
Well, come on, man. You can't... You're not going to start to frame this in terms of human rights, are you?
No, but I'm simply... It's a human dignity issue. It's a human dignity question to be talking to people who are up there in the stands and they're saying, you know, go, 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 go. And I'm a football player. I get no respect at all. I'm so stupid that I got to have a guy in the stands telling me, go, 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 go. You know?
It ain't about that, though, is what I'm trying to tell you. And
yes, but you cannot explain why it's different.
That's the problem. If you're able to explain it, Phil, you know...
Look, you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about, okay?
Maybe I do. But if you can't explain it, then I don't know why I believe what I do. And I want to be able to believe, but I can't believe if you can't explain it.
Why do I got to explain it in order for you to believe it?
Because he can't think of a reason.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Because he can't think of a reason, it's my responsibility.
Well, what I'm saying is this, Phil. You're the guy that's saying that go, go, all that cheerleading stuff is important, right?
I'm saying it makes sense for fans to want to do it, yeah.
Okay. Well, you can't say why, and so Robert is left with no belief system, you see?
Why is it up to me?
Why is it what up to you?
Robert's belief system.
Because you're the guy that said...
I didn't invent it. I'm not the guy that said, you know, hey, everybody, let's go cheer, and it won't make any sense, and Robert... I'm telling you, we're talking about this far too long.
Well, Phil, I think that's what you're saying, because you can't come up with a good reason as to why do we all do it? I do it. I'm in the grandstand at a football game, and I go, 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 go. And then I look at Frank, and I look at Jason Jay, And I think of what's at home. I think of the roast I have in the oven. I think of the laundry that I have to do. I think of the men that I have loved. And I want to take that little derringer that I don't carry in my purse, but I want to go home, take it out of the drawer, and just do what we used to call the ooh. Do you know what that is?
Oh, the ooh, yeah.
No, what's that?
That's the shape of the mouth when you put the barrel in, you see.
Oh, yeah.
What a morbid, morbid topic.
Oh, Phil, grow up.
Oh, no, no, that's the ooh. Ooh, then a barrel goes in.
Oh, is that what that is? What a morbid thing to talk about.
No, you idiot.
Okay, don't call me an idiot or all bets are off. Let's take a break, folks.
Sorry, I didn't mean to call you an idiot, Phil.
Yeah, let's take a break. I want to go home and do the ooh.
You find that funny?
Yeah, I do. I find it funny. I find it funny that you want to blow your brains out because you were cheering at a football game. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Shut up, bud. I said to shut up.
The cookies.
When you talk about...
Hold on. We're back here on the live Phil Hendry Show, and it's live every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Brad Rifkin from Rifkin Advertising is with us. We're talking about the sporting scene, specifically the cheering of crowds. And we also had Brad on to talk a little bit about Cuban television. I don't know whether Brad is listening to us. I know he's on hold, and we're going to get back to him in just a moment. Because we had that story on the fact that Cuban TV is very interesting. There is the propaganda that the Cuban government feeds its people. There's radio and TV Martí out of Miami, which is U.S. democratic propaganda from the Cuban-American community to Cuban compatriots and citizens of Cuba. And then there's a third wheel on this odd media tricycle, and that is the Cuban government itself affording its own citizens the opportunity to see shows like Grey's Anatomy, Friends, and Desperate Housewives. In other words, there are American programs that they simply, you know, the Cuban people want to watch. There's another one, Oz, the prison show, 6 Feet Under. And these are all shows that are off the air now here, right?
Yeah, a lot of those shows they're not even producing, so it's just like the cars they got down there. They got...
Well, they sort of recycle old American shows.
Yeah, they're recycling old American shows, and that's interesting. So Brad will be with us here. We're online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. A backstage pass affords you the opportunity to watch our show as well as listen to thousands and thousands of hours of radio shows and shows that go back over a decade, shows that cover a multitude of generations of the Phil Hendry Show, from our national syndication to local shows, a year's worth of our local Los Angeles show on Saturday night, including the video cast. We've got a 30-day video archive. Man, it goes on and on and on and on, and it's like $9.95 a month. It's a beautiful thing. We've got more content than Sirius XM, in my opinion, and we're about $3 cheaper a month. So check it out at philhendryshow.com. Now, as far as our iOS folks out there watching on iPad or iPhone, this is something that we're aware of, and we're in comunicado with people at Bright Cove, and we'll see what
whether we can wake them up.
Yes, whether we can wake them. No, not if we can wake them up. We'll see what they think is going on. All right, Brad Rifkin out there in Las Vegas tonight. By the way, how's the weather?
It was cold, Phil, right here in Vegas. You know, people don't think the desert gets cold. It gets cold.
Because I wanted to ask, because I've got a friend of mine that lives up there, and they were telling me it was raining.
Yeah, it was raining a little bit.
Because we had some rain here.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. How's the weather? Oh, baby.
Yeah, get to the meat of it.
Hey, man, I'll get to the meat of it.
Get to the meat of it. Get a load of him. Get to the meat of it.
And Annie, what's with you?
Well,
just because, you know, Mr. Green called up and started busting our chops over that lousy interview we did in the first hour doesn't mean that you're Mr. Green Jr., okay?
Well, Phil, you're talking about cheering, and you haven't answered my question, which is, why do we cheer? Now, you know, I said that I feel like going home and swallowing the barrel of that little Derringer that Frank bought me. And he got it for me as a joke because Nancy Reagan had a little bitty gun.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. Nancy Reagan had one of those.
A little bitty gun?
Yeah, didn't you remember when she said she had a little bitty gun?
No, she was talking about, well, I better not say.
What?
She said that President Reagan had a little bitty one.
No, she didn't, you stupid...
She almost said coon.
I did not. I did not, Phil.
I didn't hear it.
I think she almost did, yeah.
Yeah, you did. You almost said the C word.
Wait a second. Did she say it or didn't she?
I didn't say any such thing.
I thought I heard you say coon.
Well, if she said it, then that's one thing. Did she say it?
I thought I heard it, but I probably didn't.
Yeah.
I'm going to belt both of you guys just for the kicks, just to feel what it's like to dish out some pain tonight. What do you think about that? Is that a good idea?
If I were there, I would do it, Mr. Henry.
Yeah. What do you think, guys?
I don't know. I don't know.
I thought I heard her say coon.
Yeah, you thought. I apologize, Brad.
That's okay. I mean, Phil, I've always said when I go on your program, I basically kiss the real world goodbye for however long I'm going to be on your show. I mean, that's very serious. My daughter, who is now, by the way, a 30-year-old woman with kids of her own. But I was talking to my daughter tonight because they were over. I said, I'm going to be on the Phil Henry show tonight. And she said, leave your valuables. I said, yeah. But I did. I took my wallet out. And I, you know, I told her what her will was.
What is this, some kind of a running joke in the family?
Well, it's her way and my way of saying that I'm going to be kissing this world that we're in, the one that I was in before I got here, goodbye for a while. Because being on your show, Phil, I enjoy it immensely, but it's got nothing to do with reality, and it's, you know that. You know that.
Well, no, I don't know that. No, I don't.
You don't know that people that come on this program, this is the buzz in town, Phil, that going on your show, you might as well get in line.
Get in line for what?
Get in line for electroshock.
Yeah.
Get in line for insulin shock or electroshock, yes.
Yeah.
Is that right? It's that painful, huh?
Well, I'm just telling you. It's look at what we did. I'm hearing your bumper music, and we just spent the last few minutes talking about a Derringer and Ronald Reagan's little bitty gun and how electroshock beats your show. So, do you understand? Do you see what you're doing, Phil?
Thank you very much, Brad Rifkin. It was exciting. We'll be back next hour. More interesting news and views here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. It's Saturday morning. Wow, that's really cool.
Yes, it's Saturday.
Phil Henry.
Good evening and welcome to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and Saturday is upon us here. And just the behind-the-scenes tonight has been fascinating. I've got people, working in my end of the company saying, yeah, man, those guys, we've got this war going on right now between all kinds of people behind the scenes. For those of you who have been following our video cast this evening, you are following it obviously on your desktop because our iOS is down, but we'll find out what the problem is, and we will... commit a slaughter. There will be, as we say in the corporate world, there will be a mass execution. In corporate speak, you know, you often hear there was a bloodbath over at this company or that company.
Not talking about really shooting anybody.
No, you're not talking about really shooting anybody. You always hear of, hey, did you hear what happened over at this company? That no, what happened? Oh, they had a bloodbath, man. They had a slaughter. They killed everybody. It's always put in those terms. And now I know why, because that's what you want to do sometimes. So that, you know, So it goes here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're dealing with these guys that are providing our video cast stream, and they ain't doing a good job. What do you want me to tell you? And if I get really pissed, I'll mention their name on the air. So get it together, okay, guys? Here, number one, get it together, or we go to another company, and oh, yeah, by the way, I'm not paying the money that you want us to pay for bandwidth. I'm not staying with your company for anything. You understand? So either you're going to give us the iOS feed that we want, or we leave you completely. This is not some kind of, well, you know, we suck when it comes to delivering, you know, the stream for Apple products, but hey, how about that bandwidth? Yeah, fantastic, and I love your what you charge us is, like, way over the industry norm. I don't know who you guys are doing business with, but good luck.
Well, if they're listening to this show, Phil, they'll just say, well, we don't want your business.
Oh, no, not that. Please. United States can't recover. What do you mean they don't want...
Well, what were you going to read there?
Some boring story about our baseball team sucking. I'd rather talk about this. I don't care whether we play baseball well. You know, I've come to a decision. I would like to see American business get up off its dead ass and start doing some things. Quit telling me about how much the labor costs are and quit talking to me about how this and that. You guys just stink. That's all. You might as well just face the facts. You stink.
What do you mean they stink?
Just what I said. They stink. In other words, I've been listening to excuse after excuse for as long as I've been alive, for as long as I've been walking the face of this planet. I've listened to American businessmen with the same tired song and dance. Well, you know the labor costs. Well, you know the taxes. Well, you know the labor costs. You want to know something? You guys have just run out of ideas. That's the problem. You don't know how to create a product. You don't know how. See, it used to be where a guy would say, okay, this is how much it's going to cost me. This is this. And we're still going to get through it. We're still going to create something that is viable, that is unique, that is original, and that is going to get people buying it. And we will, you know, we'll get the business done. But they can't do that. Because they haven't got any ideas. We've run out of ideas in this country. And we worry about whether our baseball team's any good? I could care less. I hope we never win another gold medal as long as we live. As long as we're alive on this planet, I hope this country foregoes every silver and gold medal if we could just start getting some business done and stop with... Have you ever seen a bunch of more inept people in your life than the American business person? I mean, one person after the next with one excuse after the next as to why they can't do this, can't do that, can't do something else. And forget about, you know, me. I know I complain on our pre-show especially. I'm not talking about me. I'm just a radio guy. I'm talking about those other guys over there.
Yeah, sure. That's...
Well...
Yeah, you sound just like them.
Wait a minute, man. I'm not delivering... I got a radio show, dude. This thing could go away tomorrow and the world will never even remember it existed. Guaranteed. You name the most successful radio show, Howard Stern. As much as I love Howard, his show could go away tomorrow. Tomorrow. And I'll give it a week, and people will be on to the next thing. Sure, there's people going to miss him. His diehard fans will love him, and they'll talk about him. Oh, wow, Howard was fantastic, this, that, something else. In a year, it's out of sight, out of mind. We live in a country, man, we can't even remember who won the best, the Academy Award for Best Picture. Not this year, last year. Who was it? Quick, Margaret. Quick.
Who? In what year?
Who won the Academy Award Best Picture for 2011?
I know the answer to that. It was the game. It was. Hold on for a minute. I know the answer to that. It was the King's Speech.
Bull crap.
I'm telling you, it was the King's Speech.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
No, it wasn't the King's Speech. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
No, it was not the King's Speech. The King's Speech was 2010.
Well, how do you know, Phil, if you're so smart? Why don't you tell us?
No, I'm just telling you. You're an entertainment writer. You don't remember. And that's not a bad thing. Who cares? Who cares? I'd rather remember, you know, frankly, if you want my honest opinion, I think it's a far more important and much more enjoyable anniversary, the anniversary of when Bin Laden finally got sent down to Pit 3, you know, Ring 4.
Yeah, he went down to the Hell Hilton.
Jeez.
Would you get something fixed, bud, whatever it is? You're like,
well.
You're right, bud, he did. He went down to the napalm wing of the Hell Hilton. And right now, I don't want to talk out of school, but it seems to me that when Bin Laden hits the can, he's crapping briquettes.
Hey!
Thank you. All right, so anyway, moving on to the really important stuff. The United States can't recover after Dickey struggles early. Smile when you say that. R.A. Dickey pitched for the United States at the 1996 Olympics. Isn't that great? Winning both his starts. Yet he left with a bronze medal and a lingering sense of what might have been. It was really bittersweet in the sense that I sucked, he said. No, I'm kidding. He said it was really bittersweet that I was hoping to play Cuba and beat Cuba for a gold medal, and we never even got to the game, Dickey said here Thursday, a day before his start at the World Baseball Classic. Who's R.A. Dickey? Am I losing my mind here? In any event, his shot at redemption went awry on Friday at Chase Field as Dickey was hit hard over four innings against Mexico, dooming the United States to a 5-2 loss and an uncomfortable urgency in the tournament. You know, usually when they talk about an uncomfortable urgency, it's...
It's nothing to do with baseball.
That's right. So R.A. Dickey, even though he sucked on skates in 1996, not to be outdone, he just stunk it up the other night as well. Well, Friday, today. If Mexico beats Canada on Saturday afternoon, the U.S. of A. will face elimination against Italia on Saturday night. The Italians have been the surprise team in this tournament. Oh, the Italians are always screwing stuff up, aren't they? They're always playing it sheepish, like, paisana, you know.
What were you watching today? You were watching some Italian thing.
I was. I was watching a really cool movie, I'll tell you. It was a Roberto Rossellini film festival. So I went and I got myself my, you know, popcorn and a big giant bottle of extra diabetic Coke. And I sat down and I watched this Rossellini. This was pretty good, man. It was a movie called Paisan. And it's a series of stories. It's a series of short little episodes all taking place in Italy toward the end of the war, World War II. And in one vignette, it's an American MP because, you know, Italy was just crawling with American GIs after we got into the country and made the successful landings at Anzio and then up the boot, as they say, into Roma, which had been deserted by the Germans and so forth. And then, you know, on up into the guts of Italy went not only the Americans, but the Canadians and the British. And anyway, this movie was fascinating because it was, as I said, these vignettes. The first one I saw was this American MP, and he is an African American soldier. Now this was made in like 47 or 48, so it was right after the end of the war, and a lot of it was shot right there in the streets of Italy. It was a school of filmmaking called Italian realism.
What's that?
It's a school of filmmaking. I don't know. This guy Rossellini did it, which he used a lot of non-professional actors. In fact, I think he only used a handful of professionals. The rest were real, actual people, including the American soldiers that were in it. And anyway, this MP, who's an African-American soldier in Italy, he's an MP, and he gets drunk one night, and it's his adventure going through the streets of Rome, hammered. He's drunk, and he's missing home. And he meets this little Italian street urchin who winds up stealing his shoes. So the next day when he gets back into his Jeep, he sees the kid in the back of a truck. And it's this whole big adventure.
What? So what is he doing?
He's chasing this kid looking for his shoes.
You're telling me that the whole movie was about a guy looking for shoes?
Did I say that? I said one part of the movie.
Yeah, but what was good about it?
It was just cool. I don't know. It was just a little slice of humanity, you know? First of all, it was interesting to see a black soldier in a circa 1940s film about World War II. That, you know, right there.
Who is the actor? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember. His name was Dots Johnson.
Dots Johnson, Dots Johnson. Nope, don't ring a bell.
Well, I don't think it would, Margaret. The guy, you know, he did a handful of films. Then the next one, well, anyway, it was a really good movie, so I suggest you see it. It's called Paisan. And it was Rossellini. Why am I talking about Italian movies? I just blew off half the other half of the audience that wasn't gone because we lost the iOS feed. That was already gone after we lost that. So,
yeah, just blame Bright Cove.
Thank you, Bright Cove. Now.
Oh, that's not Bright Cove's fault because you're talking about Paisan by Roberto Rossellini, even though I have made note of it and I do want to watch it. But I'm blaming it on you because, you know.
All right, so anyway, getting back to the United States stinking it out there at the whatever the hell this is. What is this? Is anybody paying attention to this?
Yeah, it's their baseball.
I know it's baseball. If Mexico beats Canada and the United States sucks, the Italians are the surprise, that's what got me off on Rossellini and Canada, and I love my players, yada, yada, yada. For Dickey, who won the National League Cy Young for the Mets last season, oh, that's who he is. It could not have been much worse. On Friday, he was no match for Mexico's Giovanni Gallardo, the ace of the Milwaukee Brewers, who left with a 4-run lead in the fourth inning. Dickey, now with the Toronto Blue Jays. Well, whoever started this guy, he needs his head examined. This guy, Dickey, man, he can't pitch any better than he can talk to reporters and predict the outcome of games. He's no better a pitcher than he is a source for quotes and laughs. All right. Too bad, America. Better luck next time. Releasing a video game that paying customers can't play is about as consumer-friendly as selling the next Jonathan Franzen novel exclusively on the moon. But that's what Electronic Arts accidentally did this week with SimCity, an attempted revitalization of its 24-year-old franchise of city-building strategy games. Like its predecessors, the new SimCity lets players lay down roads, zone homes, businesses and factories, place parks, and provide government services and more to manage a simulated metropolis. Players see their cities primarily from high above and are alerted to citizens' complaints as traffic clogs, schools crowd classrooms, and the fire departments end up a truck short of putting out a blaze. All of these issues can be fixed through careful, real-time virtual urban planning. Even the tax code can't be tweaked from the... or can be tweaked, rather, from the series' long-time default 999 tax plan, which technically has nothing to do with the former Republican presidential candidate Herman Cain. This type of city management, which can be tedious or stressful in real life, is enjoyable as a video game, if the game works. But in the days following Electronic Arts' early Tuesday release of the PC-only SimCity, the game barely worked, although there were signs of improvement by week's end. Lucy Bradshaw, general manager of Electronic Arts Development Studio, described the release as challenging. She said that thousands of players had gotten access to the game, though she acknowledged that many others had not. Our priority now is to pull our head out of our ass and get this show on the road, said Lucy.
No, she didn't.
I know, I'm making it up. I just wish they would say that for once. That Sims game, and we're going to take a break, but just I want to say one thing. Sims is primarily played for one reason only, and that's to kill people and to have things crash and burn. Like when they had that...
What are you talking about?
Remember when they had the amusement park and you could build half a roller coaster?
Yeah, that was bitching. And then the roller coaster would crash and everybody'd burn and you'd go, ah! It's great.
What is he talking... Are you serious?
Yeah.
You could build a half a roller coaster and then the cars would go off.
Yeah, that's right. Then the cars go off, hear people go, ah! And then the burn... You know, it's everything. Yeah.
All right, so there you go. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We're online at philhenryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Tell you something, man, and welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Sims is a absolutely worthless game, and I'm telling you, Madden, the football game, that's worthless, too. I mean, any video game, ultimately, it has no value at all. Don't give me this bull crap about, well, you know, it's. I remember they used to say, it's training a whole new generation of fighter pilots. You know, they're the hand-eye coordinator. Get out of here. It's. There's nothing. There's no practical application, no value to these games. Sims especially, where you sit for hours creating a city that will never be, that doesn't, it's an entertainment thing. Yes, I get that. But unlike, for instance, watching a three-hour film, a movie, where there's a story being told that may be illustrative or illuminative or illuminutive.
Illustrative or illuminationative.
Yeah.
Thank you. What do you think, Robert?
Probably illumination.
Yeah, a movie that's an illumination. Or just it's lit, it's backlit.
Well, it's well lit.
It's well lit. You see the human condition. You see, as they say, the interior landscape of man. But Sims, it don't show you anything than one big, long, empty road, man. Your future is laid out in front of you when you play Sims, and man, it's this long, one long, empty stretch. Man, ain't nothing out there. And ask anybody that's played Sims, me, I'm just talking to Dan about it, anybody, and they'll tell you, you play it for 3-4 hours, and if you have any sentience at all, if you are at all self-aware, you're like, what the hell have I been doing? What am I doing? This is ridiculous. I'm killing, you know, on purpose. I actually played Sims once trying to actually do it right, and I killed, I don't know how many kids.
What do you mean?
They weren't getting fed. They were crapping in their diapers. The whole place was a health hazard. I had the lady from The Thing coming.
Oh, you were playing the one, The Sims Family, and...
Yeah, all that bull crap. What difference does it make? And I do it, you know, and then my kids are all, no, the way to do it is to kill people, and then there's ghosts and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, so what? You know, like their way is less, you know, like their way's inferior to mine. I mean, what difference does it make? It's all cool. So I'm reading this story about Sims and the rollout of the online-only Sim City, which is a PC game, which, frankly, you know, I like PC games because it's all kind of rolled into one thing. You know, you're not having to set up equipment on TVs and everything. But the fact is, the people are not aware of this, and the writer makes the point that if you buy a game, you're a lab rat. You have become a lab rat for the corporation. People that don't like corporations, guess what? You know, I love to listen to people going off with their big mouths about how corporations are this and corporations are that and don't do this and don't do that for corporations. Every time you buy a video game, you are now a lab rat for the corporation. You are now their little rat, and they watch as you use this game, and they refine it, they improve it. Everything's in beta test now, you know. And what we're doing is we pay a price to have that game not be so much fun, to have that system break, to have this not be something that works properly, because when it doesn't work properly, guess what? Then they make adjustments so that it does work properly, but you're paying full price anyway. And when you say to them, excuse me, but your game sucks, and I wouldn't go near it with your hands, they say,
well, it is a beta test. You knew that going in, didn't you, sir?
Yes, you're right, I did, yeah. You don't you people that run companies, do you ever get tired of hearing people tell you how bad you are? Don't you ever, ever, ever just get sick of it in your board meetings and you look at each other and go, why don't we for once do have a product and everyone loves it? What do you think?
Well, I don't know, Bill. I mean, I got to...
Well, come on, let's try it. Don't you guys get tired of being talked about like you're the scum of the earth? Like you couldn't find it with both hands, even as you increase the price? Even as you split the stock and you're splitting something, and you're splitting a brick of weed, even as you're in the back room there splitting up the coke, don't you get just a little bit...
Splitting up the baby laxative?
Splitting up your baby laxative and, whatever else. Don't you wish that you were with a company that actually did some good stuff? Huh? You guys in radio, for instance, my business, my industry, you people that run the radio business, aren't you a little tired? Or you? I guess you don't read the trades, do you? That's right, I forgot. You guys that run radio companies, you don't read trades. You stay above that and aloof from it, so you don't hear what's being said, which is basically that you guys are the stupidest pack of jackasses that ever fell out of a mother's womb. And the fact that you actually run radio companies is a miracle. It was either that or you cats were at Goodwill putting back together some lamp that you probably broke yourselves a year ago. Now then.
Oh my, so you just basically called the men that run the radio industry developmentally disabled, beating their wrists on their chests and staring at the sky. Is that what you're saying?
I never said anything of the sort.
Yeah, but Mr. Henry, that's the road you were traveling.
No, I was not. We'll be right back. The world famous Phil Henry Show, more on Sims. And the decline and fall of America, I think the country's doing fine. I just think Sim sucks. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back here on the...
Phil, you're letting all of your business out there on the air.
Well, you know, I mean, if I got to let all my business out there on the air, you know, I might as well just, I got too many things to do, man. I got way too many things to do, you know. For instance, let me just give you this. I got a Facebook page. What am I doing a radio show for when I got to manage my Facebook page?
Hey! Yeah, Mr. Henry!
Exactly. What's more important, this show or my Facebook page? Which is paying me more money? Facebook! See, that's the way. If you really want to know how the industry has changed, folks, that's it. I'm giving it to you straight. You know, nobody's going to tell you this. I'll tell you this. You want to know how much the industry has changed? Most of us make more money fooling around on Facebook and online than we do in radio. Honest to God. Because radio is trying to figure out new and better ways to pay CEOs and these guys that lay around and do nothing more money, and cats that are on the air less money. So we've decided to go out and do other things for our money. And so radio has responded by saying, yay, let's get rid of all these on-air guys because they suck and we have the egos. We're the guys that people ought to be paying attention to. And I know, I got a great idea. What's that? Let's play music. Oh, that's a great idea. Play music. You mean like with disc jockeys? Yeah. Oh, wow. Why didn't I think of that? So it's a fantastic thing, and it's only getting better. All right. So we told you all about Sims. Good luck, Electronic Arts. You suck. And by the way, since you did not come out with a PC version of Madden, I'm done with your ass big time. I'm not going out and getting Xbox, Jack. I got way too many things to do with my life than sit around with a freaking Xbox game, okay? There comes a time when you draw a line in the sand, and I've drawn this line, as Jack Nicholson said in The Border. You see this line? This line I don't step over, and it says EA Sports on it. A South Florida cop said he was in fear for his life when he snatched a man's camera from his hand on Tuesday, handing it over to a second cop who deleted the video that had just been recorded. The cops then kept the camera, handing Juan Santana a receipt where he was told he could pick it up later. The Hialeah cop later identified as Antonio Santmantanapacatuto. I can't read it, you know.
Let me see. Antonio Santmanat and Sonny Bloggy.
Yeah, Sonny Bloggy and Antonio Santmanat.
Sonny Bloggy, huh?
Yeah.
Is that right? Well, that's actually what the name of the camera is. It's a Sony Bloggy camera.
You're lying to me. Sonny Bloggy,
it's the Sony Bloggy camera. That ain't a guy's name.
Ain't there cops named Sonny?
There may be cops named Sonny, but this ain't Sonny. That's Sony.
Sonny is S-O-N-N-Y.
No, it isn't. It's S-O-N-Y. Well,
S-O-N-N-Y is Sonny.
Not in The Godfather.
Not in The Godfather? What, you remember how they spelled Sonny in The Godfather?
Yeah.
How?
They spelled it
S-O-N-N-Y.
No, he spelled it S-O-N-E-Y.
S-O-N-E-Y.
That's Sony.
No, that's Sony. S-O-N-Y.
Phil, I swear on my mother's grave... On a mother, and by the way, I didn't like my mother at all, but I swear on her grave. Okay, Phil?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that one out. You didn't like your mother.
No, I did not. What are you trying to figure out?
If you didn't like your mother, why should I give a damn...
Yeah, well, you gotta swear on her grave. You should swear on a grave of somebody you like.
Well, Bud, how about I do this? Why don't I swear on your grave? I like you.
I'm not dead.
No, not yet, but...
What?
All right, all right, all right. Sony Bloggy can't listen. What? Here, just read it.
Read it.
No, I am reading it. There were two cops. Were there two cops there?
Yes, there were. One of them.
What? I'll do it. One of them was Antonio Santmanat or Santmanamada. I don't know how to pronounce that. Antonio Santmanat and Sonny Bloggy. See?
Margaret, you know, I've seen Pig-Headed and Stubborn.
Don't you dare call me a pig.
I didn't call you a pig. I said I've seen Pig-Headed and Stubborn.
What has a pig head but a pig? If you say...
Give me this. That is not a guy's name. Here's the sentence. Listen to it. The Hialeah cop, later identified as Antonio Santmanat, told Santana that he thought the Sony Bloggy camera was a gun.
He thought Sonny Bloggy's camera was a gun.
Where's the S?
Excuse me, I'm reading it. He told Santana that he thought Sonny Bloggy's camera was a gun.
Sonny Blodgy is who?
One of the police officers.
And what's he doing with the camera?
He took it from Mr. Santana.
Uh-huh. And so he took it from Mr. Santana, and the other cop thought that his partner, who had taken that camera from Mr. Santana, was now holding a gun.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
No, it probably doesn't make sense, Miss Aaron.
Does it really make sense? Because it doesn't make sense to anybody listening. It doesn't make sense to me.
You're speaking for all the listeners now.
He told me that they have cameras with guns inside them, Santana said in a telephone interview with Photography Is Not a Crime. Oh, is there a website, Photography Is Not a Crime? So in other words, there's a website out there called Photography Is Not a Crime. They're interviewing the cop, and it ain't like these cops are being set up or anything, and it isn't like there's some vested interest in there in taking pictures of cops doing stuff. And by the way, if you can't get pictures of cops doing stuff, make sure you manipulate or push them into doing stuff. See, I didn't fall off the turnip truck last night, and I wasn't born at night, and if I was, it wasn't last night. I'm not one of these guys that immediately jumps on the populist bandwagon and says, what a great idea, man, they're catching cops. Because I know that the new game now, you know how it used to be cops harassing citizens? Now it's the other way around. There's citizens harassing cops, trying to catch cops doing stuff, trying to force them into doing stuff, trying to provoke them into doing things. And that's what Photography Is Not a Crime is all about.
You can't say that because you don't know that that's what they do.
I'm stating that that's what they do. Let them sue me. Santana, who weighs more than 500 pounds and is recovering from a car accident, so this is the fat slob that had the camera, had pulled up to Sentmanot in a three-wheeled medical scooter on the street in front of his house in broad daylight and asked for his name and badge number. I wanted to report him to internal affairs because he pointed a gun at my friend and frisked him illegally, Santana said. I wanted to get his name on my camera. But Santana, who weighs 500 pounds and can barely move once he's off his medical scooter, should have been at home in bed with an oxygen tube in his nose as his mother fed him potato salad. What was he doing out on a medical scooter at 500 pounds, endangering the lives of all around him? We have not yet gotten the answer to that here at Photography Is Not a Crime.
You're making all that up.
Well, you know what? That's the way the story ought to read.
Let me see that.
No, you don't get to see it. I'm reading it. And another thing. Santana, 500 pounds of donut oil and even getting bigger as we speak, got on his medical scooter, yes, cracked the axle because his ass is so huge.
That's pretty good, Mr. Henry.
Shut up! You're being mean to a guy that's sick.
Oh, yeah. Santana, who's got bigger problems, like his ass, than bothering police officers in the line of duty, should have been at home with his oxygen tank plugged in, laying on his five mattresses that the family had to drag upstairs to support his fat ass. And, oh, yeah, and also they had to put in a support beam, on the ground floor underneath it. Who should have been at home as his mother spoon-fed him, Slim Pack. Was instead on a medical scooter, God knows how much that cost in insurance money, cracked the axle, split the seat, caused the gas tank to rupture, as he rolled down the street and doing something that had nothing whatsoever to do with him getting 500 pounds of fat off of his ass. He was bothering some cop doing his job.
I said that I wasn't talking to the cop.
You know, you are really, that is bigotry beyond belief. And I know you're having a good time, and I know you're having a big laugh, Phil. But there are a lot of people out there that are weight challenged, that are oil challenged. And you can laugh if you want.
Oil challenged?
Yes, donut oil challenged. And you can laugh if you want.
Are you kidding me? They got a guy like that?
What?
You think I got a guy like that?
They've got a guy like that? What do you have in your mouth that...
Yeah, it sounds like you're talking with your cheeks jammed full of French bread.
I said they got a guy like that. A guy they call his oil change.
I didn't say oil changed. I said he's oil challenged.
Oil challenged, huh? So that means what?
It means exactly what I said.
So this is a guy that is fat because oil, man. Donut oil and grease. It's just, wow, he can't deal with that. He must eat it, and yet he knows he's challenged by it. I don't understand that.
You know something, smartass?
Yeah, go ahead.
The man has a weight problem. He's challenged by lard. Okay, go ahead and laugh.
Challenged by lard? Are you kidding? Challenged by... That makes it sound like the guy, when he comes up against a vat of lard, he's just defenseless. He must dive in with a straw. Is that what you're saying?
Phil, I swear... You know where you said Bin Laden is tonight? Squeezing out a briquette after dinner?
Yeah.
I think I just heard the dinner bell ring down there on Pit 7, so you might...
Nah, you blew it.
What do you mean I blew it?
You should have come with the briquette line. That was funnier.
Why don't you...
Hey!
Kick your ass.
Margaret, I think it's time for you to change, you know...
Yeah, change my what?
You said you started your girl time of the month, so...
Thank you for reporting that to everyone.
You reported it last night, right here, so don't tell me.
You really think that guy is like lard challenged?
I didn't say he was lard challenged. You know, Margaret did. So, Santana, a longtime PINAC reader, which is police photography is not a crime, who lives in Hialeah and sucks down cream-filled eclairs while he reads photography is not a crime and oils up the axle, his 18th axle, on his medical scooter. He lives in Hialeah, a municipality in Miami-Dade County, said it all started when cops pulled in front of his house in two unmarked cars after spotting his friend Manny Garcia sitting on his front porch. The porch was about to buckle because Manny is about 475 himself, and the police, in attempting to save the life of an infant that was sitting underneath it, grabbed Manny's fat ass with a winch and dragged him off of the step. Okay, so what's bad about that? They had to winch his ass off the step, save a little baby's life from being crushed under Manny and Mr. Santana's asses, and for that they're getting hassled by photography is not a crime? Photography is not a crime. Donut oil is. I thank you.
Hey.
All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show, back to conclude, to clean up, to wipe up, to, you know, to have the last few bites off of this apple crumb donut here. Or would you like it, Manny? Oh, you do? All right, we'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Hey, listen, I can make fat jokes because I used to be one. Although, you know, if I don't get out and run tomorrow.
You were talking about having to run off 800 calories.
Yes, I'm running off 800 calories tomorrow because, you know, there's some days, man, when you're on this diet, I've just been on this diet, it'll be March 19th, a 1 year anniversary. And it was a year ago at this time, I weighed 289 pounds. It was a year before that, and that would have been the spring of 2011, when I was just—I was lost because I spent that fall trying to exercise the weight down. I had hit 306 pounds in the summer of 2010, and I couldn't believe it. And so I went out and I started to exercise as much as I could. And that didn't get it done. I realized that, you know, I'm not that bright. I mean, or maybe it's just I haven't been in the diet world. Suddenly it was like, calories, Henry. So I finally put two and two together. Now, since I made my target weight, which was 210, I've been, you know, back and forth. And sometimes on certain weekends, I'll go ahead and eat what I want to eat. Now, this last couple of days, it hasn't been like that. I've just been eating more calories than I should. So tomorrow, I got to get out there and I got to do some work, man.
What you got to do?
I got 800 calories. 800 calories is I'm going to have to run... In about a half an hour, I need to run about 4 miles. Is that right? Yeah, 4 miles. So that's 8 miles an hour. And
well, is that a sprint? What is that?
That's not a sprint, but that's a pretty good. That's a pretty good run. And that's going to burn about, that'll do about, 650-700 calories. And that's just the beginning, man. That's a whole bunch of other stuff I got to do this weekend.
Yeah, weekend's supposed to when you're going to have fun and everything.
I don't want to wind up there like Jorge Santana with his Photography is Not a Crime but Powdered Sugar Baby magazine. That's what you guys ought to call it. Photography is not a crime, but photography while you're licking the powdered sugar off your fingers.
Phil, you just went off your gee-gee. Well, what is so funny?
What do you think is funny? Good God, dude. Don't you have other things that you got to be thinking about besides cops and photography is not a crime? Do you realize that powdered sugar and donut oil can diffuse the light on your camera?
So this is an excuse for you to make fun of a fat man.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You bet. He's hassling my police officers. My cops, see?
Well, they're not your cops, they're Hialeah.
Doesn't matter. Same principle, you know, they're public servants. And they're out trying to do their job. And we got fat ass there, and the Photography is Not a Crime powdered sugar squad. And these guys are going to go out and hassle cops and try to get them to do something that they don't want to do, or try to catch them in a compromising position, try to put a camera in the window of the bathroom while they're, you know, squeezing one off, whatever. And it's all a bunch of really lame and just time-wasting crap. And meanwhile, this guy is cracking the axle on his sixth medical scooter that his mother is scrubbing floors and scrubbing out the bacon strips in guys' underwear on the Miami Dolphins so that she can afford to get her son his super-duper hover-round.
I don't think it's funny at all.
What is it with you guys all of a sudden? Why is anybody laughing?
Well, I mean, Mr. Anna, you know.
What? The guy's 500 pounds, man.
Yeah, it could be a thyroid condition.
Oh, yeah, there we go. A thyroid condition.
Phil, they do exist.
Yeah, they exist. And then there is just fat slobs that... Let me tell you something, man. When I watched that one show, you remember that one Larry? Remember that guy Larry with the tube out of his nose?
Yeah, Larry eats 5 chickens a day and all that.
Yeah, they had a rundown on that guy's diet. Now, let me tell you something. That guy, Larry, when his mother and his stepmother and his dad, this was the setup, the stepmother married into this. This poor woman married basically into indentured servitude. She
Yes?
She went from the altar to a industrial kitchen that is a round-the-clock 24/7 kitchen, manned and staffed, humming along for one guy. One guy.
No, that guy Larry.
Yeah, that guy Larry. That guy was laying upstairs on the 6 mattresses with the tube coming out of the nose, and he's wearing pants that were made from a sail.
I'm going to leave because you're laughing at the expense of a you don't like me to say it, large challenged, however you want to say it.
Yeah, we don't want to say fat anymore, folks. And we're not saying weight challenged. Now, today, it's large challenged. Okay?
Who are you talking to? The people out there, they have sympathy for me.
That's right. Margaret's going to the can, so if you want to sympathize with her, you may be able to get a peek in the, well.
How dare you?
Never mind. All right, enough of that folderol, ladies and gentlemen. It has been my great pleasure. Another week, another day, and another 2 cents. It's been exciting. It's been thrilling. But I'm out of here, man. And I am taking 2 days off because it's the weekend. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, of course, is online as well at philhendryshow.com. Just saw a report here from our friends at Bright Cove. They're all over the iOS issue. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, this evening, those of you who are attempting to access this by way of your mobile device. We will, as I said, get this worked out, even if I have to kill people, and I mean that. Even if bodies have to fall, we will serve our customers who, in my book, come before everyone. You guys come before whether or not my children eat. And I'm serious, because my kids are adults now, so they can fend for themselves. But even if they were children, if they were infants, you are more important than them. See, that's where to me, that's the thing. I'm not one of these guys, that's all for my family. My family is the beneficiary of me serving you guys. So my family comes second, you come first. And when you're happy, then I will give them a few crusts of bread. But only then. And until then, that's my promise to you here from The Phil Hendry Show. Produced by Dan Northcraft, me, Phil Hendry. And be sure to join us on Monday at 10 o'clock. That's Pacific. 1 a.m. Tuesday morning for another edition of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And until then, this is Phil Hendry bidding you a fond adieu, saying, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.